The Pat Kenny Show on News Talk
with Matter Private Network. During current restrictions, don't ignore your health concerns. Our expert team is ready to help.
If you have any questions about the new close contact regime for testing, because that's where we're beginning. As you will know today, there are changes that see children under 13 who are close contacts of a confirmed COVID-19 case. They will no longer be required to self-isolate if they are symptom-free. And the move is to reduce disruption to schools. And it means, in theory, that thousands of children who would otherwise have been forced to self-isolate will actually be able to remain in the classroom. For more detail on the subject and on the subject of testing generally, I'm joined by Niamh O'Byrne, who is the HSE National Lead for Testing and Tracing. Morning, Niamh.
Good morning.
Will you take us through, as we now stand, what the current rules are in respect of who should get tested in what contexts?
Yeah, so for being considered a close contact, if you're under the age of 13, the change we're making today that if you don't have any symptoms, you no longer need to come forward for testing and restrict your movements. Now, it's the same if you do have symptoms, absolutely parents should bring a child forward for testing. The only circumstance where it's different is if you're a household close contact. So if you're a child under the age of 13 and you're living with somebody or you've stayed overnight, perhaps had a sleepover in a friend's house where there is somebody who is COVID positive, in that circumstance, that's the only circumstance we would consider the need for children to come forward for close contact testing.
If the child is over 13, so 14, 15, 16 year old in school and they're a close contact, they do get tested?
They do get tested, yes. So they remain the same as the rest of the adult population. If they're noted as a close contact, then they have to restrict their movements and get tested on day zero, which is as soon as possible, and then the day 10.
And the rest of the adult population is anybody who has been a close contact of somebody who is confirmed to have or have had at the time COVID, you need to go get tested.
Yes. Now, just the one factor, of course, is vaccination. So if a child over the age of 13 or an adult has been vaccinated and they're fully vaccinated and passed that period of time after that second vaccine, then they also don't need to come forward for testing. So we brought that in a number of months ago in line with the vaccination levels.
Even if they know themselves for sure to have been close contact?
Absolutely. Yeah. If you're fully vaccinated, as long as you're symptom free, you don't need to come forward for testing.
What about if the child is in a situation where they are a very close contact? Because in a lot of schools now you have this pod system. So you'll have a table of four or five boys or girls all sitting together. If the child comes home and says, "Mammy, the person that I was sitting beside all day today was sniffling and coughing, and the next day you hear that they have COVID," same rules apply. Don't get tested.
The same rules apply, yeah. But I mean, I suppose the most important thing is for us as parents to not bring children to school who are symptomatic. That's the most important piece at the moment, is to keep the classroom free of any of children who are symptomatic of symptoms similar to COVID. So that will really help in this environment. So what we're really trying to do now is focus on symptomatic disease in children, because the risk of transmission is higher if people are symptomatic.
And what if you decide to be on the safe side? I want to get the test anyway. Is it available?
It is available, yeah. It's available through the GP referral or through the self-referral portal online. So it is there if parents want to do that. Generally, our advice is to consult a GP if you're in any way concerned, but also to keep children in school and to enable their education at this point.
But the system won't rebuff me. If I decide, well, whatever you've told me about being close contact, I want for my own reassurance to double check, I can go and get that test.
Absolutely, yeah, that's absolutely available throughout the country.
At a cost, or does it remain free if I'm going effectively against medical advice?
It remains free, all of our testing sites. And over the weekend, we've complete capacity in all sites around the country. So if people do want to come forward with testing, that's no problem.
You say you've complete capacity across the weekend. What have you seen in terms of capacity and testing numbers over the last number of days and weeks?
So we saw quite a distinct change from Friday. So every day prior to last Friday, we had seen huge increases in the number of tests being done, and every day kind of reaching that 20,000 or exceeding that 20,000. But from Friday, we started to see a decline. So on Friday, we had an 18% reduction on the previous Friday, and then over the weekend, 20% on Saturday and 30% on Sunday. So testing has come right back in those 3 days.
It's an extraordinarily precipitous decrease, isn't it?
It's a huge decrease, yeah. So we'll see from early this week. Again, Monday is normally our busiest day of the week. So we look with interest today as well what will happen. And we'll also get a better view through the data of the age groups and the positivity levels.
Have you any insight into why Monday is so busy? Do people not want to wreck the weekend with a bad diagnosis?
It's historically been busy, as we used to have less capacity at weekends. That's no longer the case. But it still tends to be slightly higher, certainly than the weekend days. But but now we often have Thursday and Fridays who are close to equal to Monday.
Would you be able to look at the underlying trends that are causing those numbers and infer anything into them? Is it safe to say, well, this indicates that case numbers are dropping, or could it just be to do with people returning to work and being too busy to get tested, or a different attitude to testing?
Well, what we have noticed over those 3 days is the positivity has risen. So that tells us that we're in all likelihood testing less asymptomatic people. So it may already be an early start to some of the changes related to the close contact change, not just on our own referrals, but potentially behaviour, because we do see a rise in positivity, which is what we would expect to see a rise in positivity if you're testing more symptomatic people than you were previously testing.
And what's your current positivity rate?
So it's increased in those days to over 7%, and we had been down around 5%. So it's come up a couple of percent over the weekend, but it is early days. That's only data on those kind of 3 days. So we need to see how that runs through the rest of the week.
Is that positive or negative from a public health perspective? Does it mean that you are getting a better or a more accurate cohort in for testing, or does it mean that the disease is running rampant?
I think it probably means there's more accurate people coming forward for testing. So like one of the reasons to reduce the asymptomatic testing of children is to reduce the impact on children, both from having the test itself and also the restricting movement period when we weren't seeing much from it in terms of the positivity. So that would hold true with this weekend's results, that you're seeing higher positivity in those who do come forward, but less volume. Because in those kind of weeks of early September, we did see testing rise by 3.5 times for that age group, the primary school age group that had previously been. But we did obviously not see that level of cases rise in that age group. It was just a volume.
And the volume, I assume, was they've gone back to school and therefore they are getting more things causing parents to be concerned.
Absolutely. So there'd be a combination of other upper respiratory symptoms and viruses that may circulate and then also the volume of close contact testing.
In terms of the close contact testing in schools, was there any capacity reason to suspend the previous activity? Do you have the scope, in other words, if the public health decision was to say, look, let us continue to close contact young children under the age of 13, would the system allow for that?
Well, it certainly has done over the last number of weeks. We set our system up to have a surge capacity of in excess of 20,000 in the community tests per day, which is overall nearly 30,000 if you look across the rest of the system. And that's what we had in place for the last number of weeks, and the system coped. It didn't change turnaround time in terms of the laboratories and the results. So the system was working. The decisions are nothing to do with capacity. They are 100% to do with being in the interests of children and keeping children in school and not taking them out of school, because over the last number of weeks we have impacted 30,000 children by asking them to restrict their movements and taking them out of school. And for some children it'll be multiple times just by the luck of the draw. So that's quite impactful on their education, and as we know it has been over the last 2 years.
Although I suspect that there will be parents who will say, yeah, it may be impactful on their education, but on the other hand, isn't it greatly advantageous that if you catch the discovery of an asymptomatic child with COVID, isn't it way better that they be found and not put back into the general school population than that they sit there harbouring a disease among everybody else?
Yeah, I mean, what all of our data does show us, though, that children are not great transmitters of COVID. They're not the same as adults, and that environment hasn't tended to spread the disease. Whereas we do know, if you look at household positivity of children, that can be 25%. So it's much higher than in a school setting. And we don't have anything anywhere near that in a school setting. So we again have to look at the balance of risk. And in this circumstance, public health feel it's much better for children to be in school.
This will obviously get tricky for parents when you get to the slightly odd scenarios. Let's say a child goes home on Friday and isn't at all symptomatic. On Sunday, they are then tested and test positive for whatever reason. Let's imagine a child that they were playing with over the weekend. They got a phone call over the weekend. Do they then count as a community case or a school case?
So there would be a community case if they, well, the child is positive. So if the child is positive, they'd be restricting their movements and they'd be out of school. Their social contacts, so who they were playing with over the weekend, would be considered a social contact and wouldn't have to restrict their movements. It's only if they were in the classroom in the infectious period that they would be considered a classroom close contact.
But the close contacts outside the classroom who are then required to be tested and restrict their movements, what are the occurrences in which they have to do that?
So if the child is playing with a friend over the weekend and they're in their house for a couple of hours, or they're playing in the garden for a few hours, that's not considered now a close contact for a child. The only circumstance is if they stayed overnight in that house. or someone in their own household was a COVID positive case, that's the circumstance where they're considered a close contact.
Text saying, hi guys, I'm a teacher in post-primary and I welcome the latest guideline changes. The idea that schools are safer places than most, there has to be a reason for it. My opinion is that teachers are driving it, not a word of thanks though. You mentioned, Niamh, the part of the reason for this was to spare children the unnecessary hassle of going through the test. How invasive and difficult is the test for a child?
Well, some children find it quite difficult, and particularly younger children. It's still a nasopharyngeal swab, for older children. It is a possibility of doing a nasal swab for younger children if they're having difficulty with it. But it's the bigger pieces.
But that means the long Q-tip to the back of the head. Almost.
Yeah. Now we do also do nasal swabs, which is just the cavity of your nose, for smaller children, or a child who's having any difficulty with it. But I think it's more the piece that's more invasive is actually the self-restricting movements and being out of school for 10 days and the potential for that happening multiple times in the same academic year.
You mentioned earlier on the effect that the vaccines were having and that in large part is what's allowing the changes in respect of the testing. What has been your reaction to the news of vaccine resistance, particularly vaccine resistance among healthcare workers?
Well, look, I mean, we've seen really, really positive impact on vaccines. And even if you just look on this topic of the schools, the secondary school children's cases have fallen since we started back at school. So they were higher in the last week of August than they are today in an actual number, as well as the positivity rate falling. So it's had a really positive impact on that. And I think with vaccines, there's been a much less disruption in secondary schools in general. So that is a really positive piece. So the vaccine remains really important. And it's still lots of opportunity for people to come forward and get the vaccine and help in the overall disease transmission.
Although it would appear that the cohort that you are now facing into may be more resistant. I mean, Brian McCrae, the man responsible for the vaccine rollout, has been tweeting about how to get both availability and persuasion into effect to get those last few percentage over the line.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it makes a disproportionate impact on getting the last few over the line. So it continues to be really important for people to come forward and get the vaccine.
Text saying, a 9-year-old child whose dad confirmed positive yesterday. She got tested yesterday. If the result is negative today, can she return to school tomorrow?
No. They will need to do full self-restricting movements and 2 tests because they're a close contact of a household case.
So even if she has a negative PCR, that doesn't count. You still stay home and isolate.
Yes, for the 10 days and get 2 tests. Because once the rules for close contact are 2 tests, a day 0, which is the one she's just done soon as, and then a day 10, because the virus needs time to incubate. So she may not have it yet, but she still has a chance of getting it.
And is that irrelevant of the father's testing? If the father remains positive, if she does the double negative, can she go back to school?
If the father is positive, I think in that example.
But my point being, the father could remain indefinitely positive. So by the time she does her second and gets the negative, he might still be positive. Can she come back to school at that point?
If she has 2 negative tests and has restricted movement for 10 days, yes.
Final thing, what's your projection as we come into winter? Because obviously, I assume you and the public health teams get together and discuss and say, well, here's what we think is likely to be the load on the testing system and how it's all going to work. How significantly do you think it is going to ramp down and by when?
So, I mean, we're looking at various models and we do see a decline coming in the coming weeks and into October. So we do various plans, a plan for what we do with the testing system as it declines. We will hold our capacity, but we will plan for how it declines. And then we also have previously had a number of examples of ramp up plans. If certain things happen, if we see certain triggers in the disease, from new variants to hospitalisation numbers to ICU numbers, we have various triggers that would then have us plan for how we actually take it back up again. In terms,
so that even if you have shrunk capacity, if suddenly a new variant arrives and starts to run rampant, you have the fairly quick scope to return back to the 20,000.
Yeah, we will need to have a degree of agility as we move from pandemic to endemic. We will adjust the testing system. And we're working with NPHET and the Department of Health on that at the moment as to when we look to make changes within the testing system. But even when we do make changes, we will have to have a degree of agility to be able to step it back up and make changes.
Final one before you go. Why are we not using antigen testing or reducing self-isolation time periods instead of abandoning close contact tracing in schools altogether? Was there a halfway house considered?
So there is a halfway house that will be in place for special needs education. The children in that environment will have a day to five test, and so a reduced restricted movement period. And again, we'll continue to adjust that if that's necessary, if it's working. For antigen testing, we are doing antigen testing in creches as a programme. We're doing we've a whole programme just rolled out in nursing homes in a number of counties in the country for twice weekly staff testing. And we have also in third level, we have a programme running since August in third level, which is ramping further up now as the colleges go back. But from the perspective of children, again, under public health advice, it wasn't seen as an appropriate intervention from the international studies, and also from the impact again on children in terms of having them tested twice.
Although, albeit a much less invasive test.
It is a less invasive test, absolutely, yeah.
Niamh, thank you very much. That is Niamh O'Byrne, who is the HSE National Lead for Testing and Tracing.